James chapter 4. We're kind of obsessed in our country with the future. We think about it all the time. In fact, we think about the future so much, it's sometimes hard for us to focus on the past. So on a day that's set aside for thinking about the past, here at the end of the year, as you are perhaps already beginning to think about what your dreams and plans and hopes and goals are for the next year, we want to focus on the future. And if you have your Bibles, open to James chapter 4. In James 4, it's as if James is envisioning a conversation between two businessmen, two guys that have it all together. And they're going to talk to us about how to deal with, how to handle, how to, from a biblical standpoint, to process the future. I need to mention two things as we get started today. The first one is, this sermon is not original to me. The second one is that I preached this sermon once before, but several weeks ago when I realized we're going to have a week in James, I thought, man, this is a sermon that is needed. It's a sermon that I need, and I imagine it's a sermon that you need. And I don't know when I last preached it here, but I have preached it before, so if you remember a little bit of it, just nod your head and pretend you haven't heard it before, okay? That'll help me out a little bit at least. We're going to talk about what James has to say about how we process the future, and James says there are three facts as we face the future, and he highlights for us three warnings. Don't you wish somebody had come along in your life and said, when you were younger, you know, here are a couple of things, if you avoid these things, but most of us didn't avoid those things. If you never sign up for that credit card, if you make sure you don't do this, you know, if you don't go through that divorce, whatever that thing is. If someone had warned you, James puts up three warning signs that will help us as every one of us face the future and process the future. If you came in this morning and you did not get a handout, a small little piece of paper like this one right here, and you would like to take some notes today, we got a couple of guys. Chris? Sid? What? And they're going to hand those out. So if you'll hold your hand up, we'll be sure you get one of those, and that might be helpful for you, because I believe this is a lesson that perhaps you're going to want to remember a few things that we say about it. So again, remember, he's kind of envisioning a conversation between a couple of businessmen. One has his MBA from University of Jerusalem. The other is the CEO of a Tel Aviv 500 company, and they're discussing their plans. And we get to drop in and listen to the plans that they're making. Look at what these two guys say. Now listen who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this city or that city and spend a year and buy and sell, carry on business and make money. And then he says that these guys begin to talk about what they are going to do. Now this is a beautiful, if you'll notice, this is a beautiful plan that they have devised. In fact, it's a tremendous plan. Look at what he says. We're going to go there. We're going to when? We're going to do it today or tomorrow. Where? In this city or that city. How long? We'll spend a year there. What? We'll carry out our business. Why? We'll make money. The problem is they leave something out of the equation. Every day in our country, people make plans. Every day, people get together and plan how they're going to be successful with their business. But there's a problem in this. I want you to know today, or you're listening carefully, that the Bible does not condemn making money. The Bible does not criticize those who have a legitimate profit in their business. In fact, not only that, the Bible talks a lot about planning. The Bible discusses a whole lot about making plans. Well, these guys have it all planned. They have a business plan, everything, a purpose, a place, progress, all the bases covered. What's wrong? Listen carefully, Christian. Anyone here who wants to make money needs to hear these words. It is fine to make money, but the problem in this situation is that these individuals planned without God. The first problem is planning without God. Read back through it. There's no mention of God in their business model. If God overheard your business strategies, is he in on those business strategies? Is he in on it? And have you included God? This guy knew what he wanted. He knew how to get there, but he didn't check it out with God. Now, don't misunderstand. Again, the Bible talks about planning. Proverbs says, no man who goes out and builds a house without first considering the cost of how it should not do it unless he first considers the cost. And over again, the book of Proverbs will talk about how a fool does not plan. But planning without God is presumption. It's great to have plans and dreams. Some of you young people down here, you have great plans, don't you? Some of you already decided. Some of you in as early as fourth, fifth, sixth grade, you've already decided what you're going to major in school, what you're going to do in life, and that is tremendous. We are proud of you for that. I hope you have a plan. Now, don't panic if you don't. It's all right if you don't have a plan for the future. If you don't know what you're going to do, even when you go to college, it's perfectly fine. In fact, many of you will go to college, you'll get a degree, and you'll never do what you planned on doing. That's all right. But I like it when somebody has a plan. There's nothing wrong with a plan, but his attitude is an attitude of self-sufficiency. Look at this Reader's Digest article by Alexander Saul. He says this, I have spent well near 50 years working on the history of the Russian Revolution. In the process, I've collected hundreds of personal testimonies, read hundreds of books. He goes on and says, it contributed 8 volumes of my own. This guy is a prolific writer. If I were asked today to formulate as precisely as possible the main cause of the ruinous revolution that swallowed up some 60 million Russians, I could not put it more accurately than to repeat the phrase, men have forgotten God. But he wasn't done yet. This great writer said, but what is more, if I were called upon to identify the principal trait of the entire 20th century, I would be unable to reflect anything more precise than this statement. Men have forgotten God. That's what James says. And history is replete with the tombstones and the whited bones of individuals who thought they were doing really well and they planned everything perfectly in their business, but they left God out of it and they ended their life miserably, rich but miserable. That's a good sentence, isn't it? Miserably rich but miserable. You ever met anybody like that? I have. I've met folks who have all kinds of money, but they're miserable in their life. You can be a Christian and you can forget God in your daily life. I know people who openly claim to love the Lord with all their heart, but when it comes to planning their businesses, listen carefully, they are practical atheists. Oh, we see, that's you don't understand, preacher. That's business. You don't understand, preacher. This is business. As if they could somehow divorce their Christianity from their business life. Listen carefully. Jesus came not to redeem your public life. He came to redeem your private life as well. In fact, I want to say this very clearly. It is so sad when you meet someone who says, I don't believe God exists. But it is so much more sad who says, I believe God exists, but then lives their life in such a way that he acts like he doesn't exist. You say, I believe in God. What does that say about your business? Is God involved in your business? Are you a Christian if God is not involved in your business? Don't plan without God. Now here's the solution. Look at the text. Verse 15, he says, instead, we ought to say, look at it, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or do that. Include God in your goal setting. Notice that little two-letter word, if, in the text here. Have you ever realized that even the best laid plans of mice and men fall through? Murphy's Law, you know? Yeah, Phil, does that bother you, Murphy's Law? I mean, I've watched you live your life, and I've kind of thought it should. Not at all. Murphy's Law, you know, if things can go wrong, they will. Count on it. I don't know about you, but I know this. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't either. You have a plan for tomorrow. Many of you have a written out plan, what you plan on happening, but in a moment, it could change. The starting point in facing your future is to say, God, what do you want to do with me? And do you want me to do what I plan on doing? Preface all your phrases with that beautiful, beautiful perfect phrase, if the Lord wills. The whole attitude of our life should be, it is up to God. Whatever He wants is what I want. Christians for hundreds of years used to write the initials DV at the end of their letters. They'd sign their name, and at the end, they would write DV. It stood for the phrase Deo Volite, which means God willing. More than anything else in my life, I want God to direct my life. I want God's will for my life. I have a plan, but God's plan. Listen, why do we think we're so smart to believe that our plan is better than God's plan? Think about it. Do you think you're smarter than God? Do you think your plan for your life is smarter than the plan God has for your life? Proverbs 16 says, we make our plans, but God has the final verdict. Man purposes, God disposes. Verse 9, we should make plans, counting on God to direct us. We need to stop praying, God, bless what I'm doing. God, I've made my plans, and I want you to bless the plan that I've made. Instead, we should start praying, God, help me to do what you are blessing. God is doing some amazing things in this world, and I want to be a part of what He is doing in this world. I want to be in on His plans. Help me, God. I want to do your will. I want your plans for my life. That will equal success at any point in your life. Planning without God is the first mistake. The second mistake is presuming about tomorrow. Presuming about tomorrow. Isn't that beautiful on the screen? I know you can read that really, really well. I can't see it myself. So it says presuming about tomorrow. Taking it for granted. Assuming that I'm going to live forever. You know, I don't want to be harsh in any way here, but when we're really young, most folks don't consider that this life could end. That reality is this life will end. That I've only got a limited amount of time. Still in James 4, look at verses 14 and 16. Well, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. As it is, you boast and brag. And look at what he says. All such boasting is evil. Quickly, two reasons why you should not boast about the future, why you shouldn't be presumptuous in this way. One is life is unpredictable. Let's stay in the text. Look at it. You don't even know. None of us knows what's going to happen tonight, much less the rest of the year, much less the rest of our lives. All of us make guesses. Life is unpredictable. If you don't believe me, fly out to California and interview somebody watching their house go up in flames who spent millions of dollars within the last 2 or 3 years building this palatial mansion. They didn't build it knowing that. There's nothing they could do to stop it. A war could start. The economy could turn around and be bad. Your friends could leave you. You have no guaranteed potential of success. Now somebody says, boy, you're a real Debbie Downer today, aren't you, Dale? Sorry, all you women named Debbie. That's awful, isn't it? I mean, I'm glad I came to church to hear how bad things are. Listen. This is actually the greatest news I could give you at this moment. Here it is. If you don't know what's going to happen, you shouldn't let it frighten you, because life has always been uncertain. There is no need for you to worry or be afraid. The only people who need to worry about those things are the people who do not believe in the God of heaven and His omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence. And who do not believe that He has the best in store for everyone who loves Him and strives to live for Him. Isn't that great? You don't have any reason to fear. Anxiety, toss it away. You don't have any reason to have anxiety about the future, because you don't know. That person that has total confidence does not know. But if you have trust in God, that He is all-powerful, all-knowing, and everywhere, and that He loves and has the best in mind for people who serve Him, life is golden. It doesn't matter what comes. Let it cause you to trust God more. Let it cause you to depend on God more. Second reason not to presume about the future is because life is brief. The text says it. You are a mist. Your life is but a mist, the old King James says. The Greek there is the word atmos. So where I get our word atmosphere from. Your life rolls in like a fog. It rolls in the morning and it burns off by noon. Ever been driving, you suddenly got into a fog, and then driving back that afternoon, it's completely gone. Who knows how long you're going to live? Not a one of us. How does the Bible describe your life? Phrases like a leaf, grass, shadow, a cloud, a puff of smoke, a vapor. It's only a heartbeat from eternity. I do not know how long I'll live. Life is short. Somebody says it goes so fast from Hot Wheels to wheelchairs. Don't take tomorrow for granted. Isaiah chapter 62 and 56 and verse 12. Come, each one cries. Let us drink our fill, and tomorrow we will be, and tomorrow will be like today or even better. You know anybody with that kind of attitude? Let's just party up. Tomorrow's going to be better. This guy's got a sticker, got a bumper sticker on his camel that says, it's party time in Jerusalem. It's 5 o'clock somewhere in Israel. Live it up, have fun, we're going to live forever. James says that's a dumb attitude. You can't presume about the future. They interview that person that's 107 years old, and she says, boy, it's going by so quickly. Maybe we should learn something from that really, really old person. Proverbs chapter 27, maybe we should learn something from a really, really wise person as well. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. We love to announce our plans and our goals and to declare them, and it looks so smart to do all that. Next year, I'm going to double my income. Next year, I'm going to take on 3 new territories. Next year, I'm going to retire. Announcing a goal can either be a statement of faith or a statement of arrogance. Here's the difference. Why are you saying what you're saying? The solution to this second mistake is Matthew chapter 6 and verse 34. Do not be anxious for tomorrow. God will take care of tomorrow too. Or we might say it this way. Live one day at a time. That's how God says to face the future. Plan for your future, but only live this day. I cannot live in the future. I can only live today. Somebody said, today is the good old days you're going to be talking about tomorrow. Enjoy now. Spencer Johnson wrote a great bestseller about 20 years ago called The 1 Minute Manager. He wrote another little book called The Perfect Present. And in this book, he talked about the perfect present. Getting close to Christmas time, all you're thinking about that, aren't you? Here's what he says. He says the perfect present is the perfect present, the present time. The gift that God has given us. And there's not a gift you could give someone that would mean more to them ultimately in the long term of their life than yourself, than your present. Just because the future is uncertain and unsure and brief, it doesn't mean I need to get upset and panic and worry. It just means I need to be more motivated to trust God. David said in Psalm 35 and verse 13, Lord, my days are in your hands. All right, mistake number 3. You ready? Third mistake people make in planning the future, and that is putting off doing good. Look at verse 17. Anyone then who knows to do good and does it not, sins. It's an issue of procrastination. I don't think there'd be anybody that would be reading James' letter that would say, I do not plan on doing good. So he's not talking about people who don't plan on doing good. He's talking to you. He's talking to me. He's talking to us, those of us sitting here today who plan on living our life doing good. But so many of us spend our lives aiming to do it. Ever met somebody, I'm always aiming to do it. I'm intending to do it. James says that's a trap. Just knowing the right thing to do doesn't ensure you're going to do it. How do you define sin? Well, you think of murder or committing adultery or cheating or lying or stealing. But there's another kind of sin. This is a sin of what we call a sin of omission. You left something out. To him who knows to do good and doesn't do it is sin. I can do nothing and still sin. When I first started preaching, I didn't have many sermons. And I had one, and I was usually speaking at youth rallies, so I didn't get to stand up there. I had to stand down here. And in that sermon, I'd say, you know, by the way, most of us define Christianity, we could go to the local department store, we could buy a mannequin, and we could set it right here on the front seat, and we could put some kind of black and gray peppery hair, some glasses on, a crimson sweater, and some gray slacks on it, and we could set it here, and it would be as good a Christian as anybody by not doing anything at all. It doesn't drink, it doesn't smoke, it doesn't mess with all those that do, you know? A dummy could live Christianity as well as most of us. That was kind of the punchline. It didn't work, did it? It didn't work most of the time then either. But look what he's saying here. He's talking here about this sin, this horrible crime of not doing anything at all, of living your life this way where you don't do anything. The solution to this one is really simple. Do it now. Get busy this day, deciding this day I'm going to begin living my life for Christ. This day I'm going to begin accomplishing the dreams that I have of doing great things for the Father. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 27 and 28 says, "Do not withhold good from those who deserve it. When it is in your power to act, act. Do not say to your neighbor, 'Come back later, I'll give tomorrow,' when you have it now." If somebody comes to you and asks a favor, don't say tomorrow or later. Don't procrastinate. There are three things you can do with your life. You can spend it, you can waste it, or you can invest it. You can waste your life in a lot of ways. TV will show you a lot of ways to waste your time, your life. You can spend it trying to buy stuff, acquire stuff, fame and pleasure and possessions. Or you can invest your life. One of my favorite quotes I ran across years ago says this: "The best use of your life is to invest your life into something that will outlive your life." What is it going to be? What is it going to be? What's going to last forever? Let me tell you two things that will last forever, according to the Bible. One is the Word of God. The Word of God is going to last forever. It's not going away. It's going to last till the end of time. The second thing that will last forever is people. People, souls. And people will last forever in one of two places. And where I spend my time now will determine where I spend my eternity. Invest your life. Make it count. Years ago, the Peace Corps did a TV commercial, and it said this: "It doesn't matter how long you live your life if you're not doing anything with your life." We worry, listen carefully, we worry about the duration of our life, how long. God worries about the donation of our life. Who have I given my life to? What am I doing with my life? Am I making my life count, or am I frittering it away on non-essentials? God says, make it count. Remember the story Jesus told? The master gave talents, he left. He comes back later, much later apparently, and two guys had doubled their money. The third guy had taken his money and buried it in the ground and did nothing. The master of the text, the old King James, says he was wroth. I like that word. He was angry. He says, at least you could have put it in the bank and got interest from it. Get a passbook savings account. Remember those? Gain some interest on that thing. You wicked servant, doing nothing with your gift of the present of your life. That is wickedness. Make your life count. What you intend to do for the Lord, not next week, not next month, not next year. Are you thinking about leading a friend to the Lord, inviting them to church? Do it now. Thinking about teaching a Bible class? Do it now. Thinking about getting involved in a deeper study of the Word of God? Do it now. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 says, right now God is ready to welcome you. Today is the day of salvation. When is the best time to make your life right with God? Now. In Luke 12, Jesus tells a story with an illustration that James is teaching here. The story is about a man who had a very successful life on this earth, but made a very foolish decision. He decided to invest everything he had in this earth. James says he was presumptuous. He presumed about tomorrow. In verse 16, Jesus says, a certain man, the ground of a certain man produced good crop, literally abundant crops. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, I'll do this. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get all the things you've prepared for yourself? If you spend your life preparing only things for yourself and not sharing your life, if you spend your life on the my and the me and the I, God says that is foolish. That's dumb. God's ready to save now. Real quick, let's close. In the book of Acts, there's a king. His name is Felix. Paul's a prisoner before Felix. He talks to Felix. He says, Felix, God has a plan for your life. God has something better for your life. You're not here by accident. You weren't created just to breathe and take up space and get up in the bed and get up from the bed in the morning, go to work and work all day and invest and come back home and go back to bed and repeat again and retire eventually and die. There's more to life than that. Paul basically says to Felix, Felix, you commit your life to God and to Him. Obey what He says. Excuse me, I'm paraphrasing real roughly here, but Felix says, man, Paul, that's really good. Man, that's some good stuff you're talking about there, Paul. Why don't you come back in a few days? I want to hear more about this. We don't see that he ever got another chance. It's presumptuous to depend on tomorrow. Let's get specific. Have you talked to God about how you're going to retire? About your plan to go back to school? About what you're going to major in, about your plan to change your job, to get a degree. Have you talked to God about your plans to get married, to get divorced, to date, to remain single? Do you think God is interested in those kinds of things? He is. What about your business, a career change, your investments, how you spend your money? James is saying none of us has any right just to plan our lives as if God doesn't exist. To become what I call practical atheist. I believe in God, but I act like He doesn't exist. Do you have a tendency to take tomorrow for granted? I'll spend more time with my kids tomorrow. I'll make things right with my parents tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll begin this regimen of prayer. Tomorrow I'll start to give. You see, one of the problems is, what starts off as temporary ends in permanent. What starts off as a temporary condition ends in a permanent lifestyle. People are going 100 miles an hour bringing in the bucks. And then they get the bucks. And everything they really love is gone. Their time, their family, and their health. And if they don't wait too long, their soul. If you only had a week left to live, how would you spend it? What would you do? God says, live each day, each week, as if it were your last, not morbidly. But think about what's going to happen. Is God your partner in your business? How do you know it? Prove it. Make God a business partner with you. God, you own this business with me. God, you're involved in this trade, this idea, this concept with me. Some of you, you have the attitude, you know you ought to be a Christian, but you know you're not. And you're being very presumptuous with God. God says, do it today. He said, let me wait a little while. I need to think about it more. Maybe I can get a few more things in order. God says, do it today. Do it now. God will take care of tomorrow. So today is your day. We're ready to baptize you into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins. And if you're His child and you've left Him, today is your day to come back home. It may be this lesson is one that you need to take home and take that outline you've got and pray over it and think about the present and the past and the future and how you're going to process those things. Today is a day. Don't procrastinate. Say, Lord, I know what is right. Give me now the strength to do what is right. Will you come as we stand to sing?